Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show where the calendar that we follow isn't created by the Gregorians or the Aztecs, but created instead by Vince McMahon. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is Wrestling Podcast Host of the Year, Tyler Ward.
What? Tyler.
I don't know why I didn't get that.
The people voted, Andrew, and, you know... What can I say, my man? Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even know I was up for that. Well, do I get a ribbon, something?
Yeah, you get a ribbon. It's got a really, really big safety pin in it, so be careful when you attach it to anything.
Be careful when you're putting that through there. Okay, yeah. Well, I can at least add that to a resume, I suppose.
I think you should lead with that on a resume. That should be on your business cards, and people will be like, oh, okay.
If you think that's not how I'm introducing myself next episode...
Until next year, I guess.
Yes.
You are right when you said the people have voted. This is that time of the year on our show where we're going to give you the top 10 wrestlers and matches of the professional wrestling year as voted on by Tyler and I and by the fans. It's it's collective. A picture of what our listeners and us think about pro wrestling.
Yes, and I like that you called it the professional wrestling year, because I too struggle with our weird calendar of mania to mania. So I think the professional wrestling year is the best way I've heard it described, though.
Do you want to give kind of a recap to people if they're newer to the show about why
this
is the wrestling calendar begins at mania and ends at mania?
Yes. So we this isn't to say that, like, I mean, I'm sure for people who listen know that we don't just talk about WWE wrestling. We talk about, you know, New Japan and ROH and all kinds of other stuff. But for us specifically, just Andrew and I, since we grew up really watching WWE, and WWE was really what brought us into the fold of being professional wrestling fans, it helps us in terms of categorizing wrestling years by manias. Mania being the end of the year. That's the culmination of wrestling, is WrestleMania. And then the Raw after Mania is the new year, the new beginning. And for us, it just kind of helps to kind of classify it that way. But I do understand why it can be confusing that we're doing the wrestler of the year in May.
I get that. Can turn a few heads.
Yes.
It also makes sense that if you buy into WrestleMania being the Super Bowl of wrestling, then everything after the Super Bowl is the off season.
Yep.
So even though there's no off season in wrestling currently,
there's an off season for about, I'd say, what, 18 hours?
Not even really.
From when Mania goes off to Raw starts.
Yeah. And I think it's become even more of a split because a lot of long term storylines tend to end at WrestleMania, and a lot of new wrestlers historically tend to debut or change promotions right after WrestleMania. So it does feel like a clean slate, which is why that is the calendar we're looking at. So we're looking at everything from the Raw after WrestleMania 34 up until the very last shot, the trademark shot on WrestleMania 35.
Yep.
That's what we're looking at. And again, everyone who voted was entered into our contest that we're going to give away the prize at the end of this show. So make sure you stay tuned and stay listened and hear if you are the one who wins. Everyone who voted for either wrestler or match of the year got one entry into this lottery of sorts. And then everyone who left us a review on Apple Podcasts and sent us a photo of it, they got an extra 5 entries into the contest. So thank you again to those people.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. If you guys give us reviews, good things can happen. So there you go. But before we get to both of those things, you know, normally we wanted to make this an episode where we just get into the lists, but I feel like wrestling was actually so seismic in May, which is not normally a thing.
Yes. There was no way that we could just talk about the matches and wrestlers of the year.
So we're going to give a few minutes here at the top to talking about about AEW's first official pay-per-view, Double or Nothing. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Dean Ambrose / John Moxley, the artist formerly known as Ambrose.
Yes.
and his appearances on a few different podcasts now. Mm-hmm. It's been a hectic week for wrestling fans. First of all, Tyler.
Yes.
Double or Nothing as a pay-per-view, what worked and what didn't work for you? What were you shocked by?
Oh, man. Double or Nothing. So let's start with this. For Double or Nothing being AEW's first official show under the AEW umbrella, under that company, what a start. Wow. I was such a fan of this show from top to bottom. There were a few matches, I will admit, that didn't hook me as much as I guess I had hoped or people expected to. But overall, this was an amazing show. I think they really surprised us in terms of the quality, not only of the wrestling, but the entire presentation. The way it was shot, the camera angles, the organization of the ring and everything. It was done very well. It was held to such a high standard that, because I was watching it with Sarah, and I remember there were points where she had said to me, she was like, "This looks like I'm watching a WWE pay-per-view." And I was like, "Yeah, I think it does." And she was like, "No, I mean, it just, like, it looks like WWE, and maybe be a little different, but it looks this way." And I kept thinking about it, and I was like, "And I guess so. That's probably because, not that it's being shot in the way a WWE pay-per-view is, it's just that because WWE for so long has been the standard bearer of, like, professional wrestling, anything that looks what I wouldn't even classify as WWE films it, anything that looks good, you're going to be like, oh, this looks like WWE, because, like, that's all, what else do you have it to compare it to, you know? But so that was just like a weird tangent I thought about it, but it was such a great show. So many good matches, man. Wow, so many good matches.
Yeah, I already know what's on the top of my ballot for a match of the year next year.
Oh, yes. I have a front runner coming out of this. And I guarantee mine's the same. It was such a good show. What did you think from, like, the start of the show? What was the first thing you took away from it?
Well, I also was surprised immediately because of, God, what's his name? Of Christopher Jackson from Hamilton and his family doing the national anthem.
Oh, that was that was Sarah's favorite part. She was like, "This girl is amazing."
Yeah, I rushed Chelsea into the room to watch that. I thought you know they fulfilled on one of the things that they promised would be different. A few of the things that they promised would be different about their presentation immediately, holding true to their kind of liberal-leaning identity as AEW is for everyone. I think with the Hamilton star and them all wearing, like, shirts about progressive issues, like, that very quickly let you know, like, this is how we're different, and that they were accompanied by pyro. two
pyro.
Things immediately that were in there. I think I agree that the barrier of entry is so much smaller than even a Ring of Honor or a New Japan show or even like an Impact. And Impact looks pretty good now. But this had a good combination of high-definition camera work and a venue that is legitimate, that was actually full of people.
Yes.
I thought that the stage looked fantastic. The set design was fantastic. They did steal a bit from the mid-2000s TNA look of having a ramp for the heels and a ramp for the faces.
Yeah, the double ramps coming from that. Was that how they specified it? Like, I don't think I paid attention enough to see, like, who was coming out of what tunnel.
Yeah, I don't know if that is actually how it ended up working out. I mean it works. I don't think that will be permanently what they do. I think it just works for the idea.
It was a cool
of double
design,
or
definitely.
Nothing, you know. But everything seemed to matter. It took them a bit to there's going to be some growing pains with the visual representation, because while the quality of the presentation looked great. There definitely were some hiccups with the literal direction of the pay-per-view. There were some times yes. where like the action was missed. Mm-hmm. But that got better as the night better. Went on.
And I think going on that point, the one of the things that for me in retrospect, it's like charming that they kind of messed it up, but like in the moment I was like, oh, that's kind of bad. Like the commentary team was not that great.
Yeah, they were hit or miss for me. When they worked, they were great. But
yeah, like yeah, the when they worked, they were great.
Small moments. Yeah.
But I remember like one of the very first asides, like after the main pay-per-view started, it cut to that shot of, you know, JR and Excalibur and I can't remember the third guy. But that shot of them talking and literally like it was they were about to segue to the next segment and JR literally was just like, I don't know what's coming up next. Sorry, folks. What are we doing?
Like, yeah.
I was just like, oh no, come on, guys.
I hope that we'll see less of that as yeah. time goes on. But again, this is three people who haven't worked together all that much.
Yeah.
I feel like there's been maybe a little bit of work between Jim Ross and Delirious in the past, mm-hmm. but not. Or sorry, not Delirious. Wow,
Excalibur.
All of yeah. those people in luchador masks who are
yeah.
white dudes are really they blend together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So overall, I give it like an A minus on the presentation terms.
Yeah.
I think the in ring stuff was fantastic.
Fantastic. Ugh.
I didn't know who a lot of the people were coming yeah. in, and I feel confident that I understand who most everyone is coming out, except for the Super Smash Brothers and whatever they're going to be named now.
Yeah, that was weird, but I was down for it, man.
Yeah. It's never good when you are a surprise entrant and the arena chants, who are you?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the idea of a bunch of minions who create
a bunch of luchador minions yeah.
for you is really cool. What was your favorite match in this?
Okay, so... So obviously my favorite match, and I'm sure it was probably going to be the same for you as well. My favorite match was Cody versus Dustin, brother
Absolutely.
Versus brother.
Absolutely.
That was one of the best matches I have ever seen. And like the in-ring work was, I would honestly say was fine, but the story that they told, the post-match segment, oh, man, I was legitimately like moved, like I had emotions going, like it was that right there, that is professional wrestling to me.
Mm-hmm. It was similar to the way that we last year talked about the mixed tag at WrestleMania 33.
Yes.
Of, like it maybe didn't have the highest ceiling going in, mm-hmm. but absolutely did the best match it could possibly be.
Absolutely delivered.
And that's how I felt about Dustin and Cody.
And it was yeah. just such, like, and it's the storytelling aspect of it. Like, I could see that being a match that I would later show to someone new to wrestling, being like, you want to know what professional wrestling is about? Watch this. Like, because it's just, oh, God, it was amazing. The story was so great.
Yeah.
And the blood.
There's a lot of blood. I might not lean to showing it to new fans just because
maybe
of the
not
blood.
That would be the only thing that made me consider it. Just because it was a lot of blood. The blood was gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
But it like at the end, like it added so much to the story. Like at the end of the match, when Cody's giving his speech to Dustin, covered in his brother's blood, like, oh, it was so good.
Yeah,
so good. But I have to segue though.
Mm-hmm.
That was easily my favorite match. Easily my second favorite match, and this was a shocker to me, but I cannot go without mentioning it, the six woman tag match.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Japanese women hit each other really hard.
They hit each other really hard, and they are such amazing wrestlers. So I was watching this match with Sarah, and like as they were bringing in the entrance, I didn't even know this match was happening. Like I didn't pay enough attention to the card. I literally did not know who any of these people were besides Aja Kong. I had heard her name before, mm-hmm. but that was about it. And so as I'm watching them entrance, I'm like, oh, okay, this is like a stardom match or something like that. This should be pretty good. I didn't have any expectations going in, and immediately, like, in the match, like, they are just running around that ring doing things that so many of the male performers can't do, and doing it so much better than male performers can do. The stories that they were telling, every single person in that match, oh my God, it was amazing.
Yeah. Wow. I felt the same way going into this pay-per-view. Something I was worried about with All Elite was depth of their roster, of like, they have a very top-heavy roster that they have to promote while they're trying to gain fans initially, right? Like, you can't have Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose or John Moxley go in there and lose a bunch. Like, that's right. Just not going to help. And I was worried about if they had enough talented named female competitors to make a women's division that could even compete with WWE. Mm-hmm. And I feel much stronger about that now. I thought both the women's matches were pretty solid.
Yeah, the Fatal 4-Way was really good too. Yeah,
and I think there's enough characters there, like very specific characters, to make it interesting. Yeah, there were a lot of people came off on the undercard very good at the very end of this. Good, MJF was maybe the star of the pay-per-view.
Definitely the star of the Battle Royale.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked his spots in there. He's very entertaining. I do like MJF.
I thought he really showed his value as like Miz Jr. in the Bret Hart revealing the world title segment. Because like those segments don't normally work, particularly in the middle of a pay-per-view. But that one I thought did, despite Bret Hart kind of being rusty as a on-mic performer. I think he said at one point he was happy to see another world championship wrestling match. And I'm shocked that no one jumped all over him about that. Or no one jumped over him, period, because that's what happened last time he was in the ring. But I thought MJF came off really great. I thought they did a good job of teaching a new audience that Adam Page is someone that they're going to promote.
Keep an eye out for Hangman, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I can't believe I'm about to make this comparison, but I think that SCU is basically going to end up being like to AEW what the New Day is to WWE value-wise, where they might not even need to be doing a particular storyline, but they can start pay-per-views and be like this entertaining, fun tag team.
I support that, absolutely. Their SoCal is very entertaining, and I think they're one of those rare teams that they have such good chemistry together, and that they're all great wrestlers and they can put on great matches, much like we know the New Day can. But where they really shine is the promos and segments.
Yeah.
That they can put them together and fulfill them better than anyone else.
So where do they go from here? I mean, we didn't even mention, but the biggest kind of least indie kind of segment that ended the pay-per-view was the appearance of Jon Moxley.
Yes.
Doing some moves on the poker chips. Really good cut to the trademark last shot of a pay-per-view kind of thing. Where do they go from here?
So, that's what an amazing end to your first pay-per-view. To have a shock like that, like Moxley showing up unannounced, taking out Chris Jericho, taking out Kenny Omega. Like, what an amazing end. And I think... So we definitely know Moxley is going to be a huge player in WWE. I'm sorry, in AEW. Was in WWE, now in AEW.
Yes.
He's going to be a huge focus of this company going forward. And, well, just based off the finish of the main event, we know that the first AEW championship match is going to be between Chris Jericho and Hangman Page. So
in Chicago, in August 31st, All Out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I was actually, I was like contemplating that idea of specifically with the world title picture, like where do they go from here with like, who's going over, who's going to be the first AEW world champion. And I was trying to map this out, like the two different routes they can take. Now, personally, the route I want them to take is I want Hangman Page. I want Hangman Page to be the first AEW champion, because think about it, like he's a pure babyface in this company, never been in WWE before. He's 100% indie built, indie darling. and he's super young, amazing in the ring, great looking guy. Like, what better person that you could build your company of over your first champion in this company? Like, that's an amazing start. But the other option as your first champion in this new company is Chris freaking Jericho. Like, easily, arguably one of the best professional wrestlers in the history of the sport. So I want it to be Paige. I could very easily see it being Jericho. In which case, Jericho wins it. He's your first AEW champion, has a great little heel run. Who better to take it from him than Jon Moxley?
Yeah, I think that is the money match that they should build to for a while, is Moxley versus Jericho, because in this first year where it's going to be important to poach fans who maybe aren't as inside as us, that, like, that's the marquee match. Yes. I agree that Paige can be to AEW what AJ Styles and Samoa Joe were to TNA, of like,
yes,
like people who didn't have people who didn't have an association heavily with any one promotion coming into this, so that he could be the first like AEW guy.
Yes, but AEW homegrown.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense though when people are going back years now and looking at the Wikipedia of the AEW World Championship and be like, oh, who was the first champion? Chris Jericho legitimizes the title.
Exactly.
Instantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Which again, that leads me to believe it's probably going to be Jericho. But
yeah. Here's another question. One of the things that they promised, and they meaning Cody and the Bucks and Kenny Omega and Tony Khan, is that wins and losses would matter in AEW. Do you think that they've made you think that the wins or losses matter more coming out of Double or Nothing?
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting because I watched one of the post pay-per-view interviews that they did with the Bucks, and that was one of the questions, like, you know, with you saying that wins and losses matter, like, how do you foresee this going forward? And the Bucks said, they were like, absolutely, like, we want this to matter, and very much so with the match you just saw. Kenny just lost the number one contendership, so you're not going to be seeing Kenny Omega get a title shot anytime soon right now. And that sounds very like, oh, well, yeah, of course he lost the main event. He lost the number one contendership. But also it's like, that's Kenny Omega. Like, what if you're not going to build your company around Kenny Omega? Like, what are you doing? So it's I genuinely think, yeah, like they've already established that these wins and losses are going to matter. I'm curious. I'm just curious to see how it goes, because it's just not something we're used to after watching WWE for so long. Like, it's a new way of looking at this sport that I'm so excited to get into. Mm-hmm.
And I should say it's easier to make the wins and losses matter when you don't have weekly TV yet, when all of your building is being done this way. So that I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt now, but I know it will become harder when they get TV.
Yes.
A suggestion I have, if you're listening, anybody from AEW, because again, when you have implications for contenderships, it's easy to make a match matter, and not everyone's going to be in that kind of situation all the time. So I would I've seen other companies try to do stuff like this. Like, it's way too convoluted. TNA had something that was like the championship series or something that was like a 6 month long thing with points and like a bracket.
That was that confusing ass tournament they had.
So you have to do something like that that's not confusing. And I feel like rather than keeping like a win-loss record the way that like a UFC fighter would have, I think they should do something that is just like, if you win 5 matches in a row, or maybe 10 matches, make it like a big number. If you win 10 matches in a row, you can demand, you have earned a title shot, regardless of what other stuff is going on in storylines.
Yeah.
That way, and if you always have that number next to someone's name when they enter, like, you can build in importance. You know, someone could keep getting to like 8 and then losing. And then like DQs and countouts become better storyline beats, because you can spite someone else and DQ them or count each other out or something like that to ruin their 10 match win streak. And I think that's less muddy than like a, okay, we're going to have a regular season and these people have to fight these people and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what they kind of do. I think there is going to be something where they are flashing the actual win-loss records of people. That's my prediction. Yeah. I'll also say I'm sorry for the listening audience. There's definitely some kind of major accident right outside my window. There's been a lot of ambulances coming by.
Oh,
so,
no, I think you're good. I can't even hear it on my end.
I've been
maybe.
Muting myself a lot. Okay. But if it sounds like Scott Steiner is about to enter the ring, I'm sorry. That's kind of what it's going to sound
what
like.
What a
I
swerve.
Think. Yeah, I think that's kind of what it's going to sound like over here. We have a few minutes to talk about this before we get into the meat of our episode, is that recorded before Double or Nothing and then released after that was a podcast episode on Talk is Jericho, Chris Jericho's podcast, with formerly Dean Ambrose, now Jon Moxley. And it was reminiscent of the CM Punk Colt Cabana podcast that led to the legal trial of last year. Where Dean,
CM Punk's tell-all, yeah.
Yeah, this was definitely a tell-all kind of schmear campaign kind of interview where Dean went into very specific detail about why he did not like wrestling at WWE anymore, how creative works there, and why he left. What were your biggest takeaways for fans who maybe who haven't heard this yet or haven't read transcripts?
So it was a very interesting podcast, and I had texted you about it when I was listening to it. It's for fans who are very familiar with WWE and everything. It was no new information really. It's nothing we haven't heard before, but it was just like a peek into a little more detail about these things that is just very eye-opening. For me, like the things that really stood out was when Dean talking about exactly how his last 8 months ran, because I remember Dean coming back from injury and like it was a big thing, and like Dean's back and like let's see what happens. And then very soon after that was when Roman's leukemia came back and they had to deal with that, and then they turned Dean heel. And so I remember watching that while it was happening the whole time, just being like, what's actually going on here? Because they're making a lot of weird decisions and choices here. And being able to have Dean himself just be like, this is exactly what happened. It's very eye-opening. Like the many times where he would tell stories about getting a script, reading it, and just being like, what? Who wrote this? I'm not saying this. Change it. And then they'd be like, okay, well, we got to go talk to Vince. And then they'd go get approval from Vince and it'd come back and it'd be the same thing. And then you'd have to say it. Like, I can't imagine the level of frustration that they experience on a daily basis.
Yeah. That was the most shocking thing for me too, actually, was like how a storyline angle works in WWE currently. 'Cause I think I had kind of bought into what Vince McMahon had said on another podcast a few years ago, and the old-timers' idea that wrestling today isn't as good as it should be because no one wants to grab the brass ring and like, take chances. And I kind of did buy into that. People seem comfortable to me, but now I realize it's kind of impossible to grab that brass ring because there's no way to... There's so much less input from the wrestlers into what the script ends up.
It's 100% that they are given the opportunity to grab the brass ring now.
Yeah, and like you can go in and talk to Vince, but like he's having 8 hours of television a week funneled through him, so like there's not enough time. Like the story that Dean tells about trying to get one line or prop taken out of
the pooper scooper line.
Yeah, and the number of meetings and back and forths that have to go into just a simple decision like that.
Yeah.
Like I see the gridlock now. And that was really alarming to me actually. Yes, 'cause I never thought of, 'cause even as recently as CM Punk's run, we kind of understood that some people really needed the writers to script out everything for them. And some people had bullet points and some people would come and chat with the writers. And that doesn't seem like it's the case anymore. Yeah. Right? Because, like, if Dean would definitely be someone who you would give bullet points at the very least. I was shocked at the word perfectness of, like, the script for people.
And it's mind-boggling because then you take... Because Dean Ambrose is certainly not a slouch when it comes to promos. He's a very good promo. But when you take into consideration, like, people who I would consider a better promo than Dean Ambrose, guys like Kevin Owens or Xavier Woods, any member of the New Day is really amazing. Like, could you imagine like that, like them handing Kevin Owens a bullet pointed verbatim script that like you have to say every single word? Like,
I mean, it sounds like they are being handed that.
And that's what I mean. Like,
it's, those two people are like the New Day and Kevin Owens do though give the impression of their having input. So is it just that they're having input and Dean isn't, or are they just better at passing it off as their own, or are they going off script and not being reprimanded?
Like, I think it's the latter. I think they may just have a better way of making it sound more natural, I guess.
Like it's succeeding in spite of.
Yeah, I guess it's mind-boggling to like imagine how that system really works. And Dean really explained it so well, just being like, this is exactly why I am as frustrated as I have been, and getting out was not an option, it was a necessity.
Yeah. I don't agree with everything Dean said. Like there definitely it has to be some bias in what Dean said, and we only heard everything from his side. Here's what I will say though, is that even if everything he said is half true, to me it seems there is a fundamental problem in the creative process currently for WWE.
I agree.
And I don't know what the answer is. I don't want to say fire the writers, which is kind of what Dean said.
I don't even think he was saying that, because I think a big point is that maybe the writers are writing bad lines and stuff. Because a point that really stuck out for me for Dean was him saying that the problem with WWE and the writing team and the talent is that no one is trying to necessarily do their best. He said everyone is just walking on eggshells. Everyone is trying to not get fired. And that, I think, can be the most stifling to a good product than anything. And I'm always a firm believer, especially when it comes to WWE, that it's not the writers necessarily their fault. When you have every single piece of writing, every single script, every single segment being filtered through one person, like, I mean, all fingers point to that problem there. But
yeah, I agree with you. I also, my big thing is, I think the specific job that the writers are being asked to do right now, it seems like, is to script literal words for every character to say in every segment. And maybe instead of them being WWE writers, what would be more valuable is to look at them like WWE script supervisors and go back to a more bullet pointed kind of way of writing the segments. And instead of their primary job with the producers and the agents, instead of it being like, okay, we have to have a literal script, maybe they should be looking month to month at an overarching picture of like, who is everybody? What are their character traits? Where do they lie on the, what's that nine character grid, the lawful good, like chaotic good, neutral, like, and like put everybody into those categories and keep track of continuity.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would make the product more cohesive, and it might not be as crisp week to week, because like the show is crisp, it's just not good content when you step back and look at it.
Yeah, it's crisp, like it
happens and it times out.
Yeah, it happens and it times out, but it's not necessarily coherent storytelling.
Yeah, and I think that if the writers weren't being asked to look on a micro level and started looking at a macro level, that could be all that they need, really, to switch it up.
And that's, it's interesting, like another part that, another thing Dean said that really stuck out to me was this idea that when he would go to Vince to be like, hey, that I can't say this line, or like, this line's stupid, this doesn't make sense, like, Vince's response was always, he would say to Dean, he'd be like, oh no, that's you, like, that's you, you say these things. And it's so obvious here that, and it's because, look, because Vince has the end all be all say on what gets put on television, you know, these characters, essentially, it's 100% a matter of these are characters that Vince McMahon has created in his mind and the way he sees them, and not exactly how the performers themselves, like the performers see themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Vince McMahon has an idea in his mind of who Dean Ambrose is, but that's irrelevant from the man Dean Ambrose and like who he sees himself as. And when you have that sort of disconnection, like it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I'll say that's not just a Vince McMahon problem. I don't care if you're the best booker in the history and the best creative mind, you can't be a singular person looking over all of those things simultaneously.
Absolutely.
You got to let some of that go and let other people, like, you got to divide up the storytelling duties. Like if Vince wants to be like, okay, everything that happens with the two main world titles has to go through me. Mm-hmm. Fine. Like that makes sense. But I think like you need to trust your producers and agents and writers to be assigned to very specific pockets and trust them to bring you good content.
Yeah.
And maybe right now he just doesn't trust any of those people.
Yeah.
And that's a problem too. We've gone on this way longer than we probably should have. We can get into so much more about this. I think we will as the rumor mill is going to heat up in the world of professional wrestling this year as we get deeper into it. But we're not talking about this year. We're here to talk about last year, which is also kind of this year. So as a reminder, we're going to dive into our top 10 wrestlers of the year right now. Then we're going to do top 10 matches. And then we will reveal the winner of our Pro Wrestling Tees $50 gift card. So as a reminder, these are voted on by us, Tyler and I, and our fans, you. The votes are weighed so that more or less there is a third given to each voting body. Actually, I think it was a little bit swayed more in the favor of the fans this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is translated into one number, which I'm going to refer to a lot as a convoluted point number. But really, it's not just Tyler and I picking, because there are three people who made the list on the top 10 wrestlers who either Tyler and I didn't vote for, and one person who neither of us voted for made this list.
All right.
So we're going to go through and kind of explore why these people made this list. Are you ready, Tyler, to hop in?
Oh, I am ready. I've been waiting a year for this.
I'm so sorry to keep you waiting, then. Okay, so coming in at number 10.
Number 10.
Of the top 10 wrestlers of the year is Aleister Black.
Ooh, Aleister
Black at number 10. Last year, he was number 8 on our list, so he drops two spots. Part of that might be he was injured for a few months this year.
I forgot he was in our top 10 last year. That's awesome.
He was number 10. So some highlights of him this year. He was the NXT champion for 102 days in the window. It's about a third of the time. He had some really good programs with Johnny Gargano. He made the main roster tag team of him and Ricochet work, which is kind of shocking to me because they don't really have much in common. And even though he wasn't in there, his injury that made him vacate or lose the NXT title and then be pulled out of the NXT Brooklyn 4 main event, that really kind of carried NXT as a program for a lot of the year.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite thing that Aleister Black did this year?
My favorite thing Aleister Black did this year, and we're going to have to talk about a little later in the episode because it might be one of my matches as well, but Aleister Black had an amazing match with Johnny Gargano at, oh God, what takeover was that? Takeover War Games. And I specifically remember that match just because it wasn't like the longest match. There were other longer matches on that card, but I just thought the storytelling was so great. Those two, that specific match, like they came rushing out of the gate like crazy, like just amazing spots. Aleister Black is so crisp. He does some cool spots and stuff, but he's so like practiced and he's so crisp with his moves. That like springboard moonsault that he does off the ropes to like sit down in the middle of the ring. Every time he jumps, I'm like, oh God, don't bite it. Oh God, don't bite it. And I've never seen him botch it yet. Like he's so good and an amazing like character wrestler as well.
Yeah, I think he had an incredible year. And probably could have had an even better year had he not been hurt for those few months.
Yeah.
But everyone he worked with, he made look really good this year as well. Yes. He's a good team player. He also married Zelina Vega this year, which is a highlight, I think.
Which is a highlight. Yeah. So
we should also mention that he won the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic too.
Oh my just God! To put, he did.
So he really did have a good on paper year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is our number 10. Are you ready for number 9?
Number 9.
So, we had a tie for number 9.
Okay.
They got the same number of convoluted votes, convoluted points, rather, with 34. Aleister Black had 30. Okay. And this is Charlotte Flair, rather, and Roman Reigns number 9. Let's start with Charlotte. Charlotte did not make our list last year, but she shows up here at number 9.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny, because I think last year was she, what, held the title at least 3 or 4 times? And...
Yeah, I think last year she was number 11. Like, she, like, just missed the list on our list. So she creeps up into the list. She's getting there slowly but surely. This year, she was only the SmackDown Women's Champion for a combined 43 days in the window. But she was also the Royal Rumble runner-up. Mm-hmm. She worked programs with Becky and Asuka and Ronda Rousey.
Mm-hmm.
She was number 3 on the PWI 500s list.
Wow, was she?
Of women. They have a women's
list. I was about to be like, number 3? Yeah, Charlotte. No,
she was number 3 on the women's list. I think, actually, like her accomplishments listed out like that were less impressive than I thought they would be this year, but I think she did the same kind of thing Aleister Black did, where the tentpole year that the women's division had this year couldn't have happened without her being thoroughly consistent.
Yes,
the entire time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Charlotte is off that Aleister Black vein. She's one of those wrestlers who can make other competitors look very, very good. I think this year specifically, granted Charlotte may not have had as many championships or accolades such as that, but I feel like this year we've seen arguably some of the best like in-ring character work Charlotte has done with her feuds with Becky and Ronda. Like this has easily been my favorite year to watch Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm scared to see like how good she can get, because every time I feel like she's hit a natural ceiling, she just exceeds it even more. So the other person, number 9, is Roman Reigns. This is someone neither of us voted for.
Yes.
Although I feel better about him being on the list this year than I would have had he been on the list last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Let me give you the highlights, the on paper highlights. He was number 7 on the PWI 500 list. He was the WWE Universal Champion for 64 days, finally winning it from Brock Lesnar and ending his reign of terror before vacating it.
Mm-hmm.
He successfully beat cancer. That's kind of the list this year. Yep. He was also out for a long time this year. I was shocked to see him get as many votes from from our listening faithful as he did for that reason.
That for me personally, that's a lot. Like, we try to be very diplomatic about wrestlers in here, and I really hate always like people hating on Roman all the time. But for me personally, that's why I did not include him in my 10, was just that he was out for most of the year. And from personally, like, while he was active, I feel like Roman's had much better years than this past one.
Yeah.
But certainly not undeserved.
Yeah. Even in years where the Roman hate has been strongest, you can at least point to a few matches that were like barn burners that he was in. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you really got one this year. Of course, like, he had the two probably most watched and most important moments of weekly television this year in both his announcement of leaving and his return.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I consider those pro wrestling accomplishments. I feel like I considered them personal accomplishments, and very much so. Like, I congratulate him for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know that he makes as much sense. But the fans, you all voted him in. The people who did vote for him, most of them also voted him as the number one wrestler of the year, which I think is why he gets on the list. I get it. I get it. If the him beating cancer and such a positive story makes you fall in love with Roman again, more power to you.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. So moving on then to number eight.
Number eight.
I didn't mean to sound confused about that. It's definitely number eight that is next. This is someone who maybe could have finished number one if the window was only the last 3 months before WrestleMania. And that's because number eight is one third of the New Day. It is the current WWE champion, Kofi Kingston.
Ooh, Kofi number eight. Okay.
Yeah, he was not on our list last year. He ends the year as WWE champion. He was also SmackDown tag team champion for 55 days in the middle of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And he created Kofi Mania.
Yeah. Kofi Mania.
Yeah.
So, I do have a confession.
Mm-hmm.
Kofi was not in my top 10 this year.
No, he was not.
Yeah. And I really struggled at this for a while when I was thinking about it, because I think for me, just because I had a long list of other people who I thought had better work throughout the entire year, was where they had won out. But you can't, like, if we were just basing this off of, like, you know, who had the most impactful run in the year, like, Kofi's definitely up there. Like, think of all that he did in such a short amount of time. Kofi Mania only lasted, like, maybe what?
Two and a half months, three months. The week or two before Elimination Chamber through WrestleMania.
To WrestleMania, like, and in just in that short amount of time, like, he accomplished so much and had amazing matches.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, he was in my top 10, but, like, I can't think of a better person who to replace one of my entries.
Yeah, I think it's no small cookies, or small potatoes, rather, that he... small pancakes, I guess we should say.
What do you want to go with? Small waffles? Small biscuits?
Small box of cereal. it's not a small accomplishment that he's the second black WWE champion, depending on who you ask.
Yep.
Definitely the first one to win a big title at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that entire feud and match and moment is going to be the best kind of, like, WrestleMania moment in retrospect a few years down the line from this year. So I think, like, this one might, again, like, I don't think he did that much individually for the rest of the year, but he definitely finished stronger than anyone. And I know that the idea was that Ali was supposed to have that spot and got injured.
Mm-hmm.
And I, even though I love Ali, I don't see him doing as much with that spot organically as Kofi Kingston did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So moving on to number seven.
Number seven.
Thank you. coming in, the current ace, the Rainmaker himself, Okada, coming in at number seven.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a weird year for him.
Yeah, it was a weird year for Okada.
Started strong, ended strong.
yeah. I mean, what more can you say about Okada, man?
I can tell you, because I got a list of his accomplishments.
I got a list for you. It's Okada, like, in Okada was not my number one.
Mm-hmm.
He was in my top five, but he's just like on another level. He doesn't even have to be the champion. Like, if you watch Okada wrestle, you know it's gonna be a great match. Like, he's just on another level. Like, I can't compare it to anyone else right now.
Yes. I think that I'm trying to see where he was on my list. Mm-hmm. He was number 10 on my list. He just got in there. I also was the only person who voted for Hiroshi Tanahashi, for all of you other Ace fans.
Yes, which is shocking.
Yeah. But, Okada, I mean, he was number 3 on the PWI list. He won the New Japan Cup. He headlined MSG, mm-hmm. which is their biggest non-Japan show that they've ever done.
Yep.
He started and ended the year as IWGP Heavyweight Champion. He was champion for 63 days in the window. He was number 5 in our list last year, so he's slipping a little. And I do think that is because he wasn't the dominant champion all year. He was shown to be a vulnerable person this year, mm-hmm. which I think made his moment of being reestablished as the ace come yes. MSG. It made that
it feel yeah, more impactful. It made his return to the top that much better.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not really another wrestler quite like him who is athletic enough to hang with the high-flying, athletic, American indie style, but is powerful enough to be a monster who is not large
yes.
against them. He's a very strange body type. He's a strange dude.
he's the Rainmaker, man.
Yeah. So, number 6.
Number 6.
I'm sad to see that this person this low. This person was number 3 on my list. This is Daniel Bryan.
Oh my God. Number 6?
Coming in at number 6. But really, wow. I look at the top 5 and like we're not going to be upset about anybody in the top 5.
No, yeah. I assume not. But
number 6 is Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm. This is a shocker. Daniel Bryan I have to admit, was my number 1 wrestler this year.
Yeah.
And I was shocked by that, too. It was a toss-up between Daniel Bryan and Becky Lynch, and I ultimately landed on Daniel Bryan just that I can't think of a WWE wrestler this year who has excelled in and out of the ring as much as Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
He is an amazing promo. He had the amazing heel turn this year with the new Daniel Bryan that was incredibly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's inside the ring, he outperforms everyone else there. Like I had to really think about it. And like, there's no one better than Daniel Bryan this year to me.
Yeah.
But wow. Number 6.
He was someone who I considered. He was one of only 3 people that I seriously considered for number 1, along with Becky Lynch and someone else that we're going to name later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think his heel turn is the most impressive singular thing that's happened because he was the undeniable white heat babyface.
Undeniable.
And is not getting heel love, ironically, kind of like someone like Kevin Owens, who we both love, but like mm-hmm. isn't really booed.
Yeah.
For real. Like, Daniel Bryan was getting booed for real.
And that was the most amazing part. Like, when Daniel Bryan came back from injury... Like, I remember, like, I'm pretty sure you and I said it this, he will never get booed again.
Yeah.
It's impossible. He will be a forever babyface. And when they turned him heel, I was very skeptical. I was like, well, good luck with this.
Mm-hmm.
But leave it to a complete professional like Daniel Bryan to get boos. It was just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he was WWE champion for 145 days in the window.
Yep.
He had an amazing heel turn. When he was still a face, he finally got to have the angle with The Miz, which I thought was pretty good. It wasn't mm-hmm. as good as it could have been, but it was pretty good. He brought a great match out of Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
He had some amazing matches with AJ Styles right at the beginning of the WrestleMania season. He had the best match at WrestleMania, and Kofi Mania wouldn't have felt as good without Daniel being a good villain for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Daniel Bryan was not on the list last year. I mm-hmm. would be shocked. I don't doubt him at all. I think he will be a mainstay on the list for as long as he wants to keep wrestling. And he said, I think this week he wants to wrestle till he's 70. Is that right?
Oh, wow.
I think he said that, yeah. So
he could do it. He could do it.
Sure. So we're into the top five then. And coming in at number five, without...
Number five.
Yes,
sorry.
Sorry, thank you. Without his best friend Goldie, but still there at number five, is Tommaso Ciampa.
Ciampa.
Yeah.
Yes.
He also looked much better on paper than I maybe thought. And that he was just, he was the NXT champion for 238 days in the window. Was the leading heel on NXT.
Okay.
Had great matches with everyone that he touched, basically, is what I'll say. Like, he was a consistent heel in the same way of Daniel Bryan, never really felt ironically like a heel. He's yelling at grandmas and front rows. And
that was so, that was great.
Really, really precise character work. I think he's the better actor between him and Johnny Gargano. Sorry, I mispronounced it earlier.
I do agree.
Yeah. Like, I think he's the better actor than him, at least in promos and in that kind of stuff. Do we have much else to say other than he was just consistently great?
No, I mean, Ciampa was amazing. When Ciampa turned heel, we all kind of saw it coming. For me personally, I was never really big on Tommaso Ciampa during his face run or even in DIY. But him turning heel and like coming back from injury and like, you know, winning the NXT championship, like he just, before Daniel Bryan made his heel turn, like I was thoroughly convinced that Tommaso Ciampa was the best heel in the business right now. Which even with Daniel Bryan making his turn, like he still might have been, He was just very, you're absolutely right. Consistent is the word for Ciampa. He was putting on amazing matches with all kinds of competitors. He had a amazing match, I remember, with the Velveteen Dream at a takeover. The many matches he had with Johnny Gargano.
Yeah, that entire NXT 6 is going to be a big part of our top 10 matches here in a second.
Yes, he was amazing.
And speaking of him, at number four...
Number four.
Thank you. is his cohort, Johnny Gargano.
Johnny Gargano.
Comes in at number four. This was the other person who I considered giving my number one vote to. Talk about a big match machine.
Absolutely.
And
good
him.
Word.
Yeah, someone who just consistently is captivating in a way that other people can only hope to be.
And he just delivers within those ropes. He really does.
Somehow he dropped a number on our list from last year. He was number three last year. He had multiple five-star and over five-star matches in the window. He was in every major NXT storyline. He was NXT champion to end the year, and he was North American champion for 25 days in the window as well. No one does more with losing as many matches as Johnny Gargano does.
Yes.
Other than maybe like R-Truth, but they do it in a different way, I feel like.
In a different way. Yeah, Johnny Gargano, for me, I had a tough time determining who was going to be higher ranked between Ciampa and Gargano. And for me, I know personally I ranked Ciampa just a little higher than Gargano, but it's really a 1A, 1B situation for these two guys. They were just amazing on another level.
Speaking of 1A, 1B guys, it's time for number three.
Number three.
And I say that because we have our second tie.
Our second
for number three. Yeah, at number three we have two people who each got 60 convoluted points. I will say that Johnny had 59, so we almost were in a three-way tie there. So at number three it is the team of, sorry, I'm pulling up the list in front of me because I lost it for a second. It is the team of AJ Styles, who was number one in our list last year.
Yes.
And Kenny Omega.
And KO Kenny Omega.
Who was number two on our list last year.
Wow.
So they both dropped to number three.
Both dropped to number three. Not a horrible place, though.
No.
Top three.
Who do you want to start with?
Let's start with Kenny.
Cool.
This was, it in a weird sense, this was a great and also lackluster for Kenny Omega. I'm sorry, lackluster year for Kenny Omega. This was an amazing year for Kenny Omega in that he finally defeated Okada and finally grasped the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And so that in itself is a career achievement. But in a weird sense, because that being, I guess, the first part of the year for Kenny, because it, I believe, happened in July of last year. So it's, in a weird sense, it was all downhill from there for Kenny. And not to say that he wasn't putting on great matches or anything, but he lost the title at Wrestle Kingdom to Tanahashi. And I would argue, like, even while he was champion and then subsequently after the champion, like, he just wasn't putting on those Omega level of matches that we were used to, you know?
Yeah, he felt a little disconnected, and I think a lot of that has to do with the behind the scenes work to get AEW up and running.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think it's a mistake that we haven't heard on our list this year Cody or the Young Bucks, who were both in the list last year, because I think collectively they had to do a lot more work outside that wasn't being seen by people to get this year ready. And I think Kenny's contract status really kind of weighed him down. He was kind of in stasis at the end of the year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Someone else who also had a contract thing to deal with was AJ Styles. But quickly, I just want to say, of the stats of Kenny before we move on, he was number one on the PWI list last year.
He
was the IWGP champion for 209 days, much longer reign than I thought.
Yeah, actually, that is much longer.
This year, AJ was number two on the PWI 500 list. Mm-hmm. He was WWE champion for 7 months, and I don't know how many days that is. I'm sorry. He had programs that were really good with Samoa Joe, and he ended up having a good program with Shinsuke Nakamura and then with Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
He never was really promoted as the top of any card, though, which I think hurts him, which takes him away from his number one spot.
Yeah.
But AJ is still the most consistent in-ring performer that WWE has out there, I think. Where does he go from here, though?
That's a tough question.
Yeah. He's got a front runner for next year's list with his match against Seth, I think, was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. That was an amazing match. I think AJ's one of those interesting cases where even when he doesn't do anything crazy of note, like, he's still just so good. And just his day-to-day, he can make a normal SmackDown or Raw match better than a lot of people's pay-per-view matches.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in itself is what carries AJ Styles a lot. And it's weird because, like, he was champion for 7 months this past year. And, like, when in retrospect, when I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, yeah, he was champion for 7 months. But I don't know. He's an interesting case. I think AJ Styles is just he's just one of the best at doing this, and I just don't know what else to say. Like,
it's
he's a weird case. Like, I feel like he should be higher, but at the same time, like, I don't know specifically why he would be higher, but like, he's clearly deserves it. Like, it's just interesting.
I think he's now kind of accomplished everything he needs to accomplish in WWE, actually. Mm-hmm. So now we're left in this weird spot of, like, what is on his bucket list that he can go out there and try and do. I want to see him try to really become the best, like, storyline promo character this year.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good challenge for him. For
Which
you, Alan Jones.
Pretty good promo, yeah.
We're down to the top two.
Wait, hold on, I'm gonna wait for you to say it.
Number two.
Okay, cool.
And I also want to give number one at the same time.
Number
two, you'll get why in a second. Number two had 77 points. Number one had 90.
Wow. Okay.
And I think that this cements that we have a new power couple in the world of pro wrestling.
Ooh, okay.
Number two was the man, Seth Rollins. And number one is the man, Becky Lynch.
I love that intro.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Who are recently confirmed to be dating.
This is true.
IRL. Yes.
IRL.
So, yeah.
I mean, what more can you say?
Again, I have a whole list of stuff I can.
Yeah. Seth Rollins is amazing. He's their top guy in my book, in my opinion. Seth Rollins is their top guy. He constantly delivers. He's great. He's the Universal Champion. And what else are you gonna say about the man, Becky Lynch?
Yeah. Ugh. She had the single most, important year for a wrestler since maybe Daniel Bryan in the Yes Movement. Like, she states her claim out there for being on that Mount Rushmore of, like, who are the biggest touchstone stars in WWE. Like, she certainly had one of the best years storyline and in ring, really consistent. And it's because she was asked to turn heel and people didn't want it. And after that, everything just rolled for her. I think it's still continuing to roll for her. I'm curious to see how much momentum she can
keep. It's certainly cooling down, but she's still at the top, no question.
Yeah. I'll give some stats here. So Seth Rollins beat Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. He made Raw watchable in weeks when it otherwise shouldn't have been. He was the Royal Rumble winner. He held the IC title for a combined 190 days in the window. He was number 5 on the PWI Top 500 list. He was also number 10 on our list last year, so a big jump forward for Seth Rollins. And he's someone who I think, now that he doesn't have to worry about the Shield being a well that the WWE can go back to, I think he's actually kind of freed up to do more stuff, assuming creative lets him.
Yeah.
Becky Lynch, the man. She was SmackDown Women's Champion for 91 days. She had, maybe 8 of the 10 best in-ring segments this year. Her storming before Survivor Series and getting the broken, the nose is going to be in packages forever.
That's an iconic shot.
Yeah. And that's iconic with one eye and not two. her stuff with Ronda and Charlotte, with Charlotte before the Last Woman Standing match, it's all great. And her very short truncated program with Asuka was super fun. She had a complete year. She also won the Women's Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
She was the main event of WrestleMania,
where she won two titles.
Yeah, two titles.
Yeah.
How do you feel about her and Seth being at the top of this list?
I mean, it's who better? The both Royal Rumble winners, both top champions in the company. Like, it sounds like a no-brainer, really.
Yeah. I think that's the most deserved number one spot so far.
Yes.
Because we also got to go through our top 10 matches now. So everyone take a quick deep breath.
All right, take a breather.
Yeah. We're going to roll through these. Actually, I'll give you a few little insights really quickly before, as a palate cleanser, before we get to that. Some things of note that I talked to you about, some people who got close to making the top 10 were Ricochet, Cody Rhodes, Pentagon, all got really close. Young Bucks still were the highest-ranking tag team, although they didn't make the list.
Mm-hmm.
Tessa Blanchard got a lot of votes, which said we were pretty happy about, honestly.
Yeah, definitely.
The Undertaker got 3 votes. I don't know what those people were watching.
I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of some stats
of
other also-rans. Getting into the matches now, part of the voting for this was giving us your top 10 matches and then your favorite match of the year. And I'm so sorry, I was not clear enough making the form, because I just said, what was your favorite match, instead of match of the year. So a lot of people voted for, like, CM Punk versus John Cena, Money in the Bank 2011, and stuff like that. So to those people, I'm sorry I wasn't more clear. So let's get into the top 10 matches of the year. First, yes. Yeah, which number are we on, Tyler?
I think we're on number 10.
Great, thank you. Came in the end of the window in April of 2019. Tyler and I were both present for it. This was Okada winning his title back from Jay White, the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship at New Japan Pro Wrestling / Ring of Honor Wrestling G1 Supercard of Honor.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. Okay, number 10. Wow. So this was my number 2 match of the year. And I have to approach this from an objective standpoint. I think a lot of that was the bias of being there live and getting to experience it. But I don't think that takes away from the quality of the match itself, which was just amazing. What a great storyline going into this match of the dastardly heel Jay White usurping not only the IWGP title from Okada, but trying to usurp Chaos from him, and then becoming the leader of Bullet Club and trying to usurp New Japan itself from Okada. Like, great story.
It was shocking because even though it felt like Okada should go over on their biggest show, New Japan doesn't have short world title reigns, and this was a short one for Jay White.
And this being Jay White's first title reign, you'd think that, and all the other story line points of Gato siding with Jay White, like you'd think like this is the guy that New Japan is going to build this like the next year or two of storylines off of.
And they still could. Like, it definitely felt like a different type of booking for them. And I'd like to see some more of it because it was a genuine surprise. The actual match itself, the story of it ended up being, can Okada actually pull off a Rainmaker? I think he attempted like 50 of them before he got two or three of them to work in the dying moments. But that was the perfect way to end that show and actually sent the fans home happy, which is hard to do on a show as long as that show was.
Yeah.
So that was our number 10. And that match also, I will say, had 30 convoluted points. Okay. So that's where we're starting. This next match had 37. So there was actually a pretty big jump between the number 10 and number 9.
Number 9.
Yes. The number 9 match on this list was from a little show in September that's not affiliated with any one promotion at the time. It's from All In. And this was a match for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship between Cody and Nick Aldis. This one was number 10 on my list. I don't think it appeared on your list, did it?
It did not.
A lot of the matches that we voted for didn't appear. The matches, there was a much bigger pool of deserving matches this year, I would say, than wrestlers.
Yes, this was a tough one.
Yeah. I think we'd both agree that maybe the actual in-ring work doesn't make this a top 10 match. Is that fair to say?
I would absolutely agree, yeah. And I think for me, that's why it wasn't even in my top 10, and that because I think for me, a lot of my top 10 matches, I try to base a majority of them off the in-ring work, with the story being secondary. Where this match, again, not to say that the in-ring work wasn't great, it really was, but the story going into this match is what really hooked you.
Yeah. On a show where every other match on the show was like, come see how good our in-ring work is, this was the palate cleanser for that show and probably what brought a lot of people into the show saying like, oh, the NWA World Heavyweight title matters again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Dusty Rhodes' son. I think the pomp and circumstance with this match with the the like full team entrances, the feeling, the pomp and circumstance of this match, the use of blood in it felt like an homage, and an homage that was like done very well. Like when you see a movie remade and it actually is good, it's kind of how this match felt to me.
I agree.
Cool. So then let's jump to number 9.
Eight.
Oh, 8. Wow. Yeah. I was just keeping you honest.
Number 8.
Number 8. This match was from October of 2018. It wasn't even the main event of WWE's first all-women's pay-per-view, WWE Evolution. This was the last women's standing match for the SmackDown Women's Championship between Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair.
Okay.
This was the highest rated female match on my list.
Also on mine. Yep.
Why this match? Because there were a few more high profile female matches that we might hear from again on this list, but why was this one for you and me the best?
I think for me, because this was, and correct me if I'm wrong, this was at the very beginning of the man turn for Becky Lynch.
Yeah, Becky turns the night after SummerSlam, and then that leads to this match.
Right. So it's, for me, this match standed out because it was one of the first times where I felt like they had truly given the women's, like, well, obviously, because I mean, it was the women's pay-per-view, but like, it truly felt like they give them full opportunity to shine in this match and really tell a story. Like, too often in WWE do you feel like women's matches are either rushed or just not given the real opportunity to tell the story that they may want to tell in it. And this match just felt like they had all the time in the world, and they had amazing spots planned out. Like, ones that stand out, of course, is the finish to the match where Becky powerbombs Charlotte off the turnbuckle through the table. Yeah. That's a huge spot.
All the suplexes onto the piles of chairs were really dirty.
Yes, the suplexes onto the chairs. Yeah. Charlotte being buried under the pile of chairs to emerge to the 10 count. Like, it was a real standout for me, and this for me personally was easily the best match I'd ever seen Becky Lynch in.
And this is a match where people, because it's an all women's pay per view, because the wrestling audience has a lot of people who are the way they are in it. It's a lot of people, because it's different and new, they're looking for reasons to not like it, and I think that was what happened with the first Hell in a Cell women's match with Becky, or not Becky, with Charlotte and Sasha, is some things went wrong, and then it became like they don't deserve this.
Right.
Charlotte did an amazing job of circumventing that, where the first big spot in the match, when she's supposed to do the moonsault onto the table and overshoots it, and they both fall off the table and the table doesn't break, she could have just kept going. And she did the right actorly thing where she acknowledged that the prop didn't work and said, screw it, I'm going to get up there and just do like a somersault and do this again. And like sent her through the table in a more brutal way.
Yeah.
And that, I think, kind of prevented anyone from falling off of the match.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So that's number 8.
Excellent.
We're moving on to number 7.
Number 7.
And this includes 2 of the same competitors of the number 8 match. This was the main event of WrestleMania 35 for both the WWE Raw and SmackDown Women's Championships. Mm-hmm. And this was Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Ronda Rousey, concluding at 12:38 Eastern Time. Yeah.
Yes. So, was this match in your top 10?
I think it just made my top 10.
Just made number 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
It felt like, for me, it felt like the storyline, the build were too good for me to not put it on the list.
Yes. And I think that's a good point. So this match was not in my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I think retrospectively thinking it that way in terms of the build and the story and like going forward what this match meant, I think in retrospect it probably deserved to be in the top 10. For me, I couldn't bring myself to put it in. It just that the in-ring action and the match itself to me just felt very, what's the word that I want to say here, is sporadic, chaotic.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It looked like a very, and I don't want to say unsafe because it's not the right word. I don't think they were being unsafe. I think they were just being very, again, chaotic is the best thing that I can
say. Is it fair to say that they were aware that they only had a certain amount of time left and that's not what they had prepped for?
It felt rushed. It felt loose, too loose, you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There were things that went wrong in that match, and I don't really blame any of the three people in it.
No,
the
absolutely.
The show was way
I
too
agree.
Long. Mm-hmm. The few matches right before were all, you know, deadening. Mm-hmm. And Ronda Rousey breaks her arm early in the
Batista
match.
Stupid Batista Triple H match lasted a half hour.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. Like, so I think that the match still is good. I should say it got 3 stars from Meltzer. Like, it's a good match. It didn't meet our expectations, but it had the highest expectations of any other match of the year, probably, right? Is that safe to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Probably had the biggest spotlight and the biggest stakes, and I think that they, you know, did good, not great, but the storyline itself is going to be remembered forever.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to number 6.
Number 6.
Thank you. This is the first NXT match to show up. Definitely won't be the last. This mm-hmm. was from August. It was at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. It was Ricochet and Adam Cole for the NXT North American Championship.
Okay.
What do you remember most about this match, Tyler?
What I remember most about this is probably that cool backflip superkick
yes.
spot that they've done multiple times.
Yeah, the backflip superkick is what I think makes this match like now in the annals of history.
Yes,
you know?
That's definitely the thing I remember most about this match. And I'm going to be honest, arguably maybe the only thing I remember
yeah.
from this match besides that Ricochet won.
I remember I liked it during the time, and I went back and watched it too because I kind of forgot. There were so many
yes.
NXT matches that were really good this year that some of
they
them
really
together.
Were.
This got 4.5 stars from Meltzer. And
okay.
I will tell you another angle or another move that was wonderful in it was Adam Cole being on the apron and Ricochet running from the other side of the ring to do a Hurricane Rana over the top rope
oh,
and
yes.
then off the apron.
Yes.
Like that was the other really standout moment for me. But I think, you know, they had done Ricochet just springboarding front ways into his super kick before. But this mm-hmm. was the first time on WWE television that they did the backflip into the
super kick. Thing, yeah.
So that's going to make this match. This is like one of those that like, if you're putting out a DVD for either of those guys, you're like, well, that one makes the DVD because we've
oh,
got to
yeah,
have that
definitely.
That move in there. But it was a really good match as well, mm-hmm. like beyond that. But that's what we're going to remember from it.
Yep.
So then moving on. To number 5.
Number 5.
Okay. So make sure you know exactly which one I'm talking about with
okay.
this.
I can already guess what it is
yeah.
or who's in the match
yeah.
at least.
Number 5 is also from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. And this was the last man standing match for the NXT Championship between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano.
Yes.
So this
okay.
was the third in their trilogy of matches.
Yes. So this match again, not to say that all of these matches weren't incredible because they really truly were.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the action between bells blends together for me.
Yeah.
For this match, I do specifically remember the finish.
Mm-hmm.
This was when they were up, towards the entrance ramp and Johnny gives Tommaso, who's handcuffed to the wall right now, like
mm-hmm.
a running knee and
yeah.
injures himself in the process. And then right before the 10 count, like the refs at 8 and 9 and Ciampa, all he has to do is like roll off the platform he's on
yeah.
onto his feet. And but that counts. So he got it.
Yeah. That ending is super creative to me.
Yes.
And it also is a recall to the second part of their second match. At NXT TakeOver Chicago 2, because they also have a big spot in that match where
mm-hmm.
Tommaso gives the running knee to Johnny off the stage.
Yes.
So it's a really good year for last man standing matches, I realize now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, actually.
Here's why this one's
How
important.
How about that?
Yeah, this was the third in their match, or in their feud, so it's the final It's more impressive to me because Aleister Black was supposed to be in this match and was pulled late because of an injury.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the most compelling mix of work rate and like good old fashioned sports entertainment storytelling.
Yeah.
That all three of their matches have. I'd say their first one, the unsanctioned match from the year before, was very much like work rate. This Chicago mm-hmm. street fight was very like gimmicky.
Yeah.
And then this one was kind of putting it all together.
I agree. Yeah.
I will say this one had 4.5 stars from Meltzer. It also had the upside down double table super kick spot, which was mm-hmm. a table and then another table stacked on top of it, but with the legs kicking up. And okay. Tommaso took a really dirty fall through that. I think just completing the story of having Johnny's downfall being that he could just end the match at any point, but has mm-hmm. to try to do this dark thing and be vengeful and like has set it up so that he can't lose, and then the unthinkable happens and suddenly the handcuffs become the best thing for Tommaso Ciampa is really, really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then moving on to number four.
Number four.
Our good friend Johnny Gargano is in this one. Is Gargano. I'm never going to get that right.
Interchangeable, man. I really
he
do.
He definitely has said which one it is, and I can't remember. this was from April of 2019. It was one of the last matches eligible this year. This was from NXT TakeOver New York. This was the 2 out of 3 falls for the vacant NXT Championship between Gargano and Cole.
Yes.
Yeah. This is another one that we watched together.
We did.
Post-dinner from La Cayla, if you're ever in mm-hmm. Washington Heights, an amazing restaurant.
Amazing. Yep. Yeah. That fish and chips was delicious.
So what makes... I know that Dave Meltzer said this is maybe the best match in the history of WWE.
Yeah.
And this is they had a second version of this match just a few days ago that is also supposed to be very, very good.
Yes.
What makes the match between these two work so well?
Honestly, I'm not the biggest fan of the 2 out of 3 falls gimmick. I think it can be utilized well, and arguably some of the best matches I've ever seen have been 2 out of 3 falls, but I'm just never a big fan of it, just because a lot of sometimes the falls can be too predictable, and that generally the first fall is going to be like a surprise. The second fall is going to be the person who got pinned getting it back. So then you can have a one-on-one face-off for the last fall, generally. And sometimes, like, they just know how to do it, and it's just amazing. And this match really was.
Yeah.
Both of these guys, I think, are amazing in-ring storytellers. Adam Cole has, I think, arguably some of the best facials in professional wrestling. Like, mm-hmm. no one makes a better face than Adam Cole. Yeah. He doesn't.
I will say that if you love super kicks, then this is your favorite match, because there's 300 of them. I think
a lot of super kicks.
I think what also makes it work is that the first two falls happen pretty quickly in this match. And then the third fall, the story is that like Johnny cannot be kept down no matter what. And they do so many false finishes that you buy it more because of those first two falls being so fast, it does feel like now it can end at any time.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually kind of the subtle thing that made it work.
Yes. And I think for this match too, it definitely added to it that it was a vacant championship, because too often in championship matches, you are biased on who's going to go over depending on who's the current champion, because at least I'm sure for you and I, being, you know, wrestling fans who really like look into the backstage elements of booking, it's too often in these situations you're like, I'd like for this person to win, but it just doesn't make sense to take the title off this person right now or something like that. But with a vacant championship, like it's you genuinely can't really necessarily predict who it's going to be. It's completely open.
Yeah. And that's also they didn't have that much time to prepare for this one too.
Yes,
that was not an injury they expected. So more kudos to them. Mm-hmm. We're into the top three.
Okay.
Number three. Is one more match with Tommaso and Johnny in it. This is the aforementioned Chicago Street Fight from NXT TakeOver Chicago 2. This was in June of 2018. This was the second of their three skirmishes.
Yes.
The most hardcore, definitely.
Yes.
So what do you remember from this one?
So this one was the finish of Gargano being spiked DDT'd on the wood.
Yes. On the exposed wood below the pads and below the canvas of the ring.
Yes, so I do remember that. And I remember Ciampa was handcuffed, I think, while he DDT'd Gargano. So there's that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this was the first match where I had seen someone do that spot specifically, pulling up the padding of the ring and exposing just the wood planks.
Yeah.
It's the first time I had seen that. So that was genuinely new to me and very interesting.
Yeah, this was rated 4.5 stars from Meltzer. This was the first time they really involved Candace heavily in the feud. And Candace is worried about Johnny maybe turning to the dark side. And that's why I think this really is the like Empire Strikes Back of their matches.
Yeah.
There's a really, really nice ECW reference early on where the fan with a Johnny Gargano sign hands it to Johnny, just like a fan-made sign, and he hits Tommaso with it, and it's like, oh man, that really hurt him. And it's because there's a stop sign inside of
it. There's a stop sign inside it. That was so great.
This match looks super different than the other two. Like, we were kind of saying that they're three big matches, all great, kind of run together, but this one you can see and instantly know which one it is, not just because they both wear shirts, which is what makes it a street fight, but because it like the ring looks chaotic by the end.
Oh, yeah,
there's
absolutely.
Like stuff everywhere. I will say that like that ending is so good, but it's good for me because of the aforementioned running knee off the stage. And then they have a thing in that area with sound equipment where Johnny Gargano does a Death Valley Driver type move, like an Emerald Fusion type move off of that.
Oh, yes.
And once that happens, he could end the match, is the idea. They do a very long thing where the match is stopped and Tommaso is stretchered out, and then Johnny decides to go full dark side.
Exactly.
Rips him off the stretcher, handcuffs him, and beats him senseless for like 3 or 4 minutes. And he could pin him at any time in that. And it's because he turns away for a second, because he's so evil, that Tommaso gets the one moment to DDT spike him.
It's the cause of his own destruction.
Yeah, which is A+ storytelling in the land of giants with two pretty small guys.
Yeah.
So we're into our top two, Tyler.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
With what number are we on?
I believe it's a number two.
Oh, good. I was confused. This was one of the last few matches eligible. It's from WrestleMania 35. It was my number one match of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It ends at number two, and that is Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan for the WWE Championship.
The culmination of Kofi Mania.
Yeah. What made this match so great, Tyler?
This match was, I want to say this match was 60% storyline build up and 40% just in ring. Amazing.
Yeah.
What else can you say about the build up? This was the culmination of Kofi Mania, of a 10-year odyssey of Kofi Kingston just grabbing for the WWE Championship, for a shot at the WWE Championship, and finally getting it. And when you add in the element of Daniel Bryan, who having his own storyline of being the underdog who no one ever thought could attain the top prize in the company, and him now being the top guy who he being like represented by the people he was fighting against, and now he's the bad guy, and Kofi, like, the parallels and the storytelling in this were absolutely incredible. Some of the best work WWE has done in a very long time.
I will
and
say,
then the in-ring work, it spoke for itself. It was incredible.
I would say the in-ring work has something really subtle now that I watched it again. Is that all of Daniel's offense and defense is incredibly ground-based in this one.
Yeah.
And you can tell that the entire strategy is that Kofi is trying to do crossbody presses and drop kicks. All of his moves are not just aerial, but like a being thrown in kind of variety. And mm-hmm. Daniel, all of his moves are trying to catch his arms and legs and stretch him mid that. Right. And they do a lot of variations on it. And I think that makes the in-ring work really work. I mean, I think this was the best match at WrestleMania. This is a career maker. And I think the reason it was number one for me is we watched it in a room with people who are casual fans to people who had never seen a wrestling match. And they all reacted exactly the way that the performers wanted them to.
Everyone was super engaged in this match.
Yeah. But it's not number one.
It is not.
The number one match.
Numero uno.
That's one of the two members of Super Smash Bros, right?
Wrestler
Uno or something. It doesn't matter.
Like that.
This was your number one match. I think mm-hmm. it was my number two.
Ooh, okay.
This was from June 2018. The earliest match, I think, from our list to make it.
Just barely made it. Yeah.
This is from Dominion 6-9, and it was for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. It was a 2 out of 3 falls match. Mm-hmm. No time limits. Went over an hour. Went like 1 hour and 4 minutes, I believe. This was Kenny Omega fulfilling his destiny, winning the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship from Okada. I'm going to let you just wax about this because I know that this has a special place in your heart.
It does. So, in a special place in mine and Meltzer's heart, this is the greatest match I've ever seen. That's all you can really say. And it's funny because that's what I said about our number one match last year, which was the time limit draw, Kenny versus Okada.
That actually wasn't our number one match last
year. Oh, was it not?
No, it was your number one match.
It was my number one. Right. Okay.
It was, hold on, I can tell you. Last year, it ended up actually as the number three match. It was beat by Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate. And by Gargano and Almas.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That's fair. Yeah. But yes, so for me, my favorite match last year was their time limit draw they went to. And of course, give it to them now. My favorite match this year and the new best match I've ever seen is this 2 out of 3 falls match. And it's like, it's one of those times where when you're watching it, and you know, like it just feels different. And I would argue that we probably felt the same way watching Double or Nothing. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're not
like,
wrong.
Not that these were the best matches we had ever seen, but when you're watching something like that, something new, something different, something that feels like history in the making, like it's you can there's a tangible like feeling to that you can recognize. And for me, that was this match, like watching this match unfold, the story they were telling, how hard they were working for over an hour. Like, I can't stress that enough. Like, the New Japan style of wrestling is already far more intense than what they do in WWE. Now imagine doing that for over an hour straight. Like, I'm flabbergasted and I don't know how to describe it, but like, it's just the most amazing match I've ever seen. Like the story that they told over it from the first fall, from Okada getting the sneaky roll up on Kenny Omega, and you're like, oh no, Okada's got the lead. How's Kenny going to come back? Kenny's never even pinned Okada. How is he going to do this? And then Kenny comes back. He hits the one winged angel. Okada, no one has ever kicked out of the one.
I love that.
Nokata. No one has ever kicked out of the one winged angel. So he hits it. Of course, he gets the 1-2-3. And so now they're tied up again. And already this is probably, 30 to 40 minutes into the match?
Yeah.
We still have another 25-minute classic to go. And just the most amazing a match. And
are you ready for my comp for it?
Yeah, just I'm good. I just gotta breathe.
Yeah, that was like an hour long match for you. I think this match is the Gone with the Wind of wrestling.
Ooh, wow. And okay.
That it's gonna be heralded as an all-time great. It's gonna appear as number one on some people's like lists of best matches ever. It's super long.
Very long.
You can analyze it to no end. And it's super long, but it's worth it. And it's going to be not everyone's cup of tea, which I don't like Gone with the Wind, honestly. But I love this match. So I think it is now in my mind the Gone with the Wind of wrestling. Yeah.
I very much like that. That's a great comparison.
We should make a poster with Kenny as
as
Rhett Butler and yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's excellent.
Well, that was our top 10 list. I will give a few stats for the matches. I will say that kind of won in a landslide. Kenny and Okada had 106 convoluted points.
Yep.
Kofi and Daniel had 75. The Chicago Street Fight at 71. Everyone else was kind of in the 50s who ended up on our list, or the 30s. There were 25 matches that got between 20 and 30 points. So there was a big glut in the middle. Some ones that we voted for that didn't make it on for me was the AJ Styles Samoa Joe SummerSlam match that was ended early with the Daddy, You're Bleeding, and with the Wendy, I'm going to be your new daddy.
Yep.
Like that for me was so good. You had a few also that didn't make the list.
I had a few, and
the ladder match, the Ring of Honor ladder match.
I had the Ring of Honor ladder match just because that was really good. Okada versus Marty Scurll at All In was an amazing match. The one that I'm not surprised at all. This wasn't on our top 10 list, but the one that I just have to mention was the Golden Lovers versus Okada and Ishii tag match because. How amazing was that? Like this was supposed to be just a go home match leading up to a pay-per-view, and this go home match was like one of the best tag matches I've ever seen. It was incredible.
I'll say some other notable ones that got close to making the list was the NXT War Games match, Kota Ibushi versus Naito at Supercard. The Randy Orton Jeff Hardy Hell in a Cell match got pretty close, which was super fun. If only for like a few big moments.
Yeah.
Roman versus Brock at SummerSlam was pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Velveteen Dream, Ricochet. Those were all pretty high up there. The Women's Money in the Bank match also just barely missed out on the list.
Yeah.
So there's some fun stuff in there. I was sad that the All In Battle Royal didn't make it higher on the list. I really wanted that to make the list, but Battle Royals are tough. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of like the Gone with the Wind of wrestling now. We're 142, not 142, we're an hour and 42 minutes into this. But we got one more big thing left to do.
We do.
It's time to give away a gift card.
Oh, boy.
So I have...
The moment you've all been waiting for.
Yes. Hopefully you didn't just fast forward to this, but if you did, I understand. So everyone, if you voted for match... You get one entry. If you voted for wrestler, you get one entry. And if you emailed us a review of the podcast, you got an additional 5 entries.
Mm-hmm.
All of those, just so you, there's no transparency about how we're doing this. They're all listed in an Excel sheet for me right now. So everyone has a number corresponding to a row, you know, so like you're all in a grid. And I'm going to Google right now, going to the random number generator.
Random generator.
Putting in the two limits.
The number of times I've utilized that.
Yeah, a lot. So that is going to be the person, or that's going to be the bot that picks the winner, so don't get mad at me.
Yes, so get mad at Google, not us.
Yeah, easy to do. Okay, let's see here. All righty then. Putting in the limits right now, it's going to be between 2 and 258. And the winner is...
All right, drum roll.
Yep. Whoever's number 114, which is Cam Bison is what I'm going to say.
Cam Bison. We're going to go with Bison.
Is our winner. Cam, yes. Check your email. You
congratulations, Cam.
Yeah, and you'll figure out how to get your your $50 Pro Wrestling Tees gift card from us.
Yes.
I will say I'm a little
sad.
What
a great wrestling name, by the way.
Yeah.
Cam Bison.
Yeah. You should get rid of the K and A and Cam and just go by M Bison. I will say that I don't know if this is good to let people know, but we were Cam was number 114. Number 115 would have been one of the people who reviewed our show. so close. I won't say which one it is, just so that you're not thinking, oh man, I got this close in particular.
Yeah.
Cam also was the very last person to vote for a wrestler and for match of the year in the window, which I
Excellent.
Find
awesome.
Pretty interesting.
There
so
you go.
Thank you, Cam, for doing your due diligence and getting in there before the end of the wire.
Yes, appreciate it.
Great. Well, that's all we got for this week. Do you got any plugs, anything going on over there in the world of Turbo Mansion?
Nothing update from what I've last told you. We are still chugging along, working on that second album.
Mm-hmm.
But when I have some juicy news for you, I promise you guys will be the first to know.
Great. So as a reminder, if you want us to answer any of your questions in the Kayfabe 5000, which we'll return next episode, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can email them to us directly at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. You can also find the show on Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts is what that's actually called, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review while you're there. It will give you better odds to win a gift card from us, and then you'll get so close and lose it.
Yes.
So as always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
Dig it!
Oh, it's good that your voice is back to normal now.
Oh, yes, he is back. Top shape, you could say.